I whisper, taking her hand. I haven't held her hand in years, and it brings back the memory of us huddling together on the boat to Finland when I was sick and she was strong. We were once so close you couldn't slide a piece of paper between us. Now the mere touch of her hand feels alien. I'm so tired, Adelina confesses as we climb to the second floor. We're halfway to the north wing and the belfry protected by the padlock. I don't know what's wrong with me.
I do.
Do you want me to carry you?
You can't carry me.
Not with my arms, I say. She's too tired to argue. I focus on her feet and legs, and a few seconds later, I've lifted Adelina off the floor and begin to float her down the dusty corridors. We pass the ancient statues cut into the rock wall and enter the narrower hallway in silence. I worry that she's fallen asleep, but then she says, I can't believe you're using telekinesis to fly an old lady like me down the hall. Where are we going?
I had to hide it, I whisper.
We're almost there. I promise. I unlock the padlock, and it falls from the oak door's handle. And soon I'm following a floating Adelina up the stone stairway that circles around the north tower, leading to the belfry. I can hear Legacy faintly meowing from the top. I open the door to the belfry and set Adelina gently down next to the chest. She props her left arm up on the chest lid and leans her head against it. I can see she has just about lost her battle with the pills, and I'm angry with myself now for tricking her. Legacy climbs into her lap and licks her right hand.
How is there a cat in here? She mumbles.
Don't ask. Listen, Adelina, you're almost completely asleep, and I need you to open the chest with me before you are, okay?
I don't think I have...
Have what? I ask.
Have it in me right now, Marina. Her eyes are closed.
Yes, you do.
Put your hand on the chest's lock. Put my hand on the other side. I press my palm against the side of the lock, and it feels warm. I use telekinesis to pull her right hand away from Legacy's tongue and onto the other side of the lock. She interlocks her fingers with mine. A second passes. The lock snaps open.
Guys? Something's totally happening back here.
The seven orbs that hover in front of my chest in the back seat of the SUV are speeding up, and I can no longer control them. It gets so bright that I have to cover my eyes.
Hey, dude, cut it out, Sam barks. I'm trying to drive up here.
I don't know what's going on.
Pull over, Six yells.
Sam rips the vehicle onto the shoulder of the road and slams on the brakes, stone and gravel crunching and pinging us. The six planets and one sun dim in brightness, and the planets start to whip around the sun at such a rate that it's hard to focus on any single one. With each orbit, the planets are absorbed into the sun until it's the size of a basketball. The new globe rotates as though on an axis, and then it produces a flash of light so bright that I'm momentarily blinded. It slowly dims, and sections of its surface raise and recede until what's left behind is a perfect replica of Earth itself. All seven continents, all seven seas.
Is that? Sam asks. That looks like Earth.
The planet spins near my head, and on its third or fourth rotation, I see a small pinprick of pulsing light.
Do you guys see that little light? I ask. Look at Europe.
Oh, yeah, Sam says.
He waits for another rotation, and then squints.
I would say that's in, what, Spain or Portugal. Can someone reach the laptop? Hurry!
With my eyes still on the globe and the tiny pulsing light, I crash my hand around behind me until I find the laptop. I hand it to Six, who hands it to Sam. He looks up at the globe hovering in the back seat, types, and looks up.
Well, it's definitely in Spain, and it looks to be close to, well, the closest city seems to be a place called León. But that's slightly off. We're looking at the Picos de Europa Mountains for sure. Has anyone ever heard of them?
Definitely not, I say.
Me neither,
Six says. Is that maybe our ship? I ask.
No way. Not in Spain. Well, at least I highly doubt it, she says. I mean, if it is our ship, then why would it just start glowing now, showing us where it is? That wouldn't make any sense. Besides, you've looked at these things how many times?
A dozen, I say. Maybe more. Sam hugs his headrest and raises his eyebrows.
Right. So it's as if something just activated it.
Six and I look at each other.
It could definitely be one of the others, Sam says.
Could be, Six says. Or it could be a trap.
She looks at Sam.
Has there been any suspicious news from Spain?
He shakes his head.
Not as of 5 hours ago, but I'll check again right now.
He starts typing on the keyboard.
Before you do that, let's get off the main road before someone notices there's a glowing planet of Earth floating in the car, I say. We're pretty damn close to paradise, remember?
Adelina snores, and I feel guilty. But for the first time in my life, I see the inheritance I should have received years ago. Rocks and gems of different colors, different sizes and shapes. A pair of dark gloves and a pair of dark glasses, both made of materials I've never seen before. There's a small tree branch with the bark pared away, and under that, there's an odd circular device with a glass lens and floating needle, not unlike a compass. But it's a glowing red crystal that has me most intrigued. Once I look at it, I can't look away, and I slowly reach down and take it in my hand. It's warm and tingly in my palm. For a brief second, the red light brightens, and then it fades and begins to slowly pulse at the same rate I breathe. The crystal grows hotter, brighter, and it begins to emit a low hum. I panic, nervous that one of my legacies has activated a Loric grenade.
Adelina!
I yell.
Wake up! Wake up, please!
She furrows her brow, and her snoring intensifies. With my free hand, I shake her shoulder.
Adelina!
I shake her harder, and as I do, I drop the crystal. It bounces hard on the belfry's stone floor and rolls towards the doorway. As it falls from the first stair to the second, the red light stops pulsing. As it falls from the second stair to the third, it stops glowing altogether. And as it falls to the fourth stair, I chase after it.
Sam zips us down a dark dirt road. The globe continues to whir in my face. The tiny pulsing light continues to try to tell us something. We come to a stop, and Sam kills the engine and lights.
So I'm thinking it's one of you guys, Sam says, turning around. It's another number. And that number is in Spain.
We have no way of knowing that, Six says.
Sam nods at the globe.
Okay, look. You guys were meant to stay apart from one another when you first arrived, right? That's how it worked. You all go off in hiding until your legacies develop, and you train and everything. And then what? Then you get together and you fight together. So this light right here, maybe that's a signal to get together, or more likely, It's a distress signal from one of the remaining numbers. Or, guys, maybe number 5 or number 9 just opened up their chest for the first time, and because we have this thing running at the same time, we can communicate.
Maybe they see we're in Ohio then?
I ask.
Shit. Maybe. Possibly. But seriously, think about it. If the elders were going to give you all this stuff in your chests, then they'd give you something to communicate with each other, right? Maybe we just unlock the key somehow, and we've got the location of someone who needs our help, he says.
Or maybe one of the others is getting tortured and they're being forced to contact us, and it's a trap,
Six says. Just as I'm about to agree, the edges of Earth grow fuzzy, and then the entire globe vibrates with a female voice that says,
Adelina! Despierta! Despierta! Por favor, Adelina!
I'm about to yell back, but the globe suddenly shrinks, reforms into the 7 orbs, and returns to normal.
Whoa, whoa, whoa! What just happened? I ask.
I'd say the signal has been cut, Sam says.
Who is that girl? And who's Adelina?
Six asks.
I catch the stone after it bounces off the 9th stair, but no matter what I do, it doesn't glow like it did before. I shake it in my palm. I blow on it. I set it in Adelina's open hand. It doesn't change from its new faint blue color, and I'm worried I broke it. I carefully set it back inside the chest and pick up the short tree branch. With a deep breath, I stick the branch out one of the 2 windows and I concentrate on the opposite end. There's a bit of a magnetic force happening, but before I can really test it or figure it out, I hear the oak door at the bottom of the tower creak open.
Chapter 21. While we drive, I try a few more times to regain the signal with the globes. But every time I get the solar system up and running, they just orbit like normal. It's almost midnight, and I'm about to rifle through the other stones and objects in my chest. But it's then I see the scattered lights of a town on the horizon. A sign passes on my right just like it did a few months ago when Henri was behind the wheel. Welcome to Paradise, Ohio. Population, 5,243.
Welcome home, Sam whispers.
I press my forehead against the window and recognize a dilapidated barn, an old sign for apples, a green pickup still for sale. A warm feeling comes over my entire body. Of all the places I've ever lived, Paradise has been my favorite. It's where I made my first best friend. It's where I developed my first legacy. It's where I fell in love. But Paradise was also where I met my first Mogadorians, where I had my first real battle and felt real pain. It's the place where Henri died. Bernie Kosar jumps onto the seat next to me, and his tail wags at an amazing rate. He shoves his nose through the small crack in his window, and he sniffs furiously at the familiar air. As we take the first side road on the left and make several more turns, backtracking here and there, making sure we're not being followed, finding the best and least conspicuous place to leave the SUV, we go over the plan once more. After we get the transmitter, we go right back to the car and we leave Paradise immediately, Six says. Right?
Right, I say.
We don't make contact with anyone else. We just go. We leave. I know she's referring to Sarah, and I bite my lip. Finally, after all these weeks on the run, I'm back in Paradise and I'm told I can't see Sarah.
Got it, John? We leave? Right away?
Lay off already. I know what you're getting at.
Sorry.
Sam parks the SUV on a dark street under a maple tree 2 miles from his house. My shoes dropped the asphalt. My lungs take their first real breath of paradise air, and I instantly want to go back to how it was, back to Halloween, back to coming home to Henri, back to sitting on my couch next to Sarah. We don't take any chances of losing my chest in an unguarded car, so Six opens the back door and lugs it onto her shoulder. Once comfortable, she makes herself invisible. Wait, I say. I want something out of there first. Six? Six reappears, and I open the chest and retrieve the dagger, slipping it into the back pocket of my jeans. Okay, now I'm ready. Bernie Kosar, buddy, are you ready? Bernie Kosar transforms into a small brown owl, and he flaps his way onto a low branch of the maple tree.
Let's do this already.
Six picks up my chest and disappears again. Then we run. With Sam trailing at a good pace, I jump a fence and pick up speed on the edge of the nearest field. After a half mile, I'm veering into the forest, loving the way the branches break off my chest and arms, how the tall patches of grass whip my jeans. I look over my shoulder often, and Sam is never farther than 40 yards behind me, jumping over logs, sliding under branches. There is a noise beside me, but before I can reach for my dagger, Six whispers that it's just her. I see a swatch of grass part down the middle, and I follow. Luckily, Sam lives on the outskirts of paradise with large yards separating each neighbor. I stop just inside the lip of the forest when his house comes into view. It's a small, modest house with white aluminum siding and black shingles, a thin chimney on its right side, a tall wooden fence enclosing the backyard. Six materializes and sets down my chest.
That it?
She asks. That's it. 30 seconds later, Bernie Kosar lands on my shoulder. 4 minutes go by until Sam lumbers through a line of brush and stands next to us, out of breath, his palms planted firmly on his thighs. He looks up at his house in the distance. How are you feeling? I ask.
Like a fugitive. Like a bad son.
Think about how proud your dad would be if we pull this off, I say. Six turns herself invisible to run reconnaissance, checking the shadows of the nearby houses, the back seats of every car on the street. She returns and says everything looks okay, but there are some motion sensor lights on the house on the right. Bernie Kosar flies away, perching himself on the highest point of the roof. Six grabs Sam's hand, and they turn invisible. I tuck the chest under my arm and quietly follow them to the back fence. They reappear, and Six goes over first, then Sam. I toss the chest over and climb quickly after. We duck behind an overgrown shrub, and I survey the backyard and its trees, high grass, a big tree stump, a rusty swing set, and an antique wheelbarrow on its side. There's a back door on the left side of the house, and two dark windows on the right.
There it is, Sam whispers, pointing.
What I first thought was a tree stump peeking out of the middle of the yard is actually, upon closer inspection, a wide stone cylinder. Squinting, I see a triangular object sticking up off its top.
We'll be right back, Six whispers to Sam.
My hand in Six's, I turn invisible and say,
Okay, Eagle Good. Guard that chest as if my life depends on it. Because it does.
Six and I carefully walk through the high grass towards the well, and then kneel in front of it. Numbers border the circumference of the sundial. 1 through 12 on the left side, and another 1 through 12 on the right. 0 at the top, and the numbers are surrounded by a series of lines. I'm about to grip the middle triangle and twist randomly when I hear Six gasp.
What?
I whisper, raising my eyes to the dark back windows.
In the middle, look, the symbols.
I study the sundial again, and my breath is caught in my throat. They're faint and easy to overlook, but in the middle of the circle,
are 9 shallow Lorik symbols.